Welcome everyone to this panel presentation, Hispanics and the Elections. I am Mariel Fiori, Managing Editor of La Voz Magazine. I would like to thank the Center for Civic Engagement, Elections at BART, and the Political Studies Program for co-hosting with La Voz Magazine this event. I would also like to thank Wally Compress, Head of La Voz Club, for his help with this event, and Don Chardin from the Red Hook Library. We are co-hosting a series of events during Hispanic Heritage Month. This is one of them. And we have something for later. I will mention it later. Thanks to Don. I hope we could learn a lot today. I'm very happy that Professor Jonathan Becker, Councilwoman Milagros Lecuona, activist Laura Garcia, and Sandra Cuesha Oxford are here with us today to talk about Hispanics and the elections. Some may ask, why this particular panelist? Well, each of them represents a different perspective from their respective experiences. You may see that a big elephant is missing from this room. I personally invited 8 Republican Latinos, some holding office, some not, and each one of them told me they couldn't make it today for a variety of reasons. Draw your own conclusions. The format for today will be the following. I will introduce each of the panelists and ask a question to each one. Each panelist will have about 5 minutes to answer. We will be timing it. I think Wally will be timing the panelists. Por favor. We will have 3 rounds of questions in this manner. After that, we will open up to questions from the audience, students, and community members alike for the last 3rd part of the event. After that, you are all welcome to stay and continue talking while eating some appetizers that we are getting from Just For You restaurant in Kingston and hot cider that Don made for us. So let's get started. The size of the Hispanic electorate is expected to number 27 million people, according to the Pew Hispanic Centers. That's 12% of all eligible voters, a share equal to that of black among eligible voters. But voter turnout among Hispanics has long lagged that of other groups. So we know the statistics. Why, according to your experience, Latinos don't participate? This is the first question I would like to ask to Milagros Lecuona, and I'm going to introduce her first. She's originally from the Canary Islands, Spain. After living in several cities around the world, she moved to White Plains, where she has been a resident since 1987. Before coming to the United States, Milagros lived in Guadalajara, Mexico, where she taught at the School of Architecture, ITESO, and co-owned an art school. Milagros holds a BS in architecture from the University of Madrid, Spain, where she majored in urban planning, and holds dual master's degree from Columbia University School of International and Public Affairs, CIPA, and a School of Urban Planning, GSAPP. She has more than 30 years of experience in architecture and urban planning. She's the principal at Lecuona Associates, an award-winning architectural design and urban planning consulting firm in White Plains. She's an assistant adjunct professor at the GSAPP Urban Planning Master's Program and at the SUNY Empire State College. She's a former member of the Westchester County Planning Board, the White Plains Open Space Acquisition Advisory Committee, and the White Plains Cable Commission. She was co-president of the WPHS-PTA. Currently, she's the chair of the White Plains Sustainability Committee and represents the city of White Plains on the Long Island Sound Water Intermunicipal Committee. She's a member of the White Plains Budget and Management Advisory Committee and the White Plains Historical Society. Milagros is a board member of the Westchester Hispanic Coalition and a member of the White Plains Volunteer Firefighters. Milagros Lecuona has been a councilwoman in the city of White Plains since 2008. She's a strong advocate for responsible and efficient growth, the protection of the built and the non-built environment, and the preservation of the city's beautiful and diverse neighborhoods. One of Milagros' priorities as a city council member is to assure that policies are universally inclusive physically, economically, and socially. She finds it rewarding to put her knowledge, experience, and creativity to work for better communities and host and produce a radio show called Livable Cities. She enjoys performing with the Taconic Opera Company. Milagros got her respect for nature growing up in the Canary Islands, her appreciation for music from her parents, and her devotion for community service from the residents of White Plains. She has 2 grown children. And the question again, why, according to your experience, Latinos don't participate in the electoral process?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me to this panel. And it's a pity that nobody from the Republican Party is here today, because I will like to thank them for bringing a candidate like Trump, since because of that, a lot of Hispanics and other minorities are coming out to vote for the first time. So I think that we have to thank them for making it possible that finally there is a strong reason out there to that indicates that the vote is very important. I am a member of the Hispanic Democrats of Westchester, and we were this last Saturday in Pennsylvania, and we were walking for the whole Saturday in neighborhoods that were basically Hispanic neighborhoods, and 95% of the people were telling us, we are voting. We are voting for Hillary Clinton because this, I am not even going to say what their opinion was about Trump. So, but looking back at the local levels and so on, I think that the same reason that I am saying that now there is a reason for Hispanics to go out and vote, they are seeing the importance of the vote. Prior to that, the question is, why should they vote? Are they really involved? Many of us come from cultures where you cannot get politically involved. I grew up with Francisco Franco. He was a dictator. We couldn't vote. And then I moved to Mexico, and I was not a citizen. I couldn't vote. So for me, I discovered the power of voting when I came to this country. And a year after I became a citizen, I ran for office. But I already went through the whole process of getting involved in the community. I have seen that a lot of people that are getting involved in politics that are Hispanics around my area, they get involved because something happened in their life, something very close, very personal. Like there is a county legislator, her brother got killed, and that motivated her to get involved in politics because then he thought that she could make a difference. So you see that sometimes you need this very strong event that happened in your life that makes a big change, and you said, well, if I want to change, I have to really do something about it. I just cannot sit and expect that other people will do it for me. And that's a process. So I know that another question will be what we are doing to change that. And we will address that later. And I don't know how much time
Two more minutes.
Okay.
She's giving you signs over there.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Evelyn.
But definitely I think that if people don't have a motivation to get involved and to go out to vote, they don't see the value of doing so. And then there is also the factor of fear. People that think that maybe behind the going to the polling, they may have people asking them questions. They maybe not speak the language fluently, and they get embarrassed. I was a co-president of the high school PTA many, many, many years ago, and I tried to bring Latin Hispanic mothers to our meetings, and they will tell me, no, we cannot speak English, and we are embarrassed. So we put then people that will do the automatic instant translation for them. Still was not enough. We will pick them up and we will drive, and was not enough. So only when then they see that their children need for them to get involved in the PTA is when then you see that then they started realizing that they must do something about it. But it's something that they are not doing. We are not doing in our own countries. So it's a totally different process, and process, as usual, takes time.
Thank you so much. We're going to ask the same question to Laura Garcia. Laura Garcia is the Racial Justice Program Manager for the YWCA Orange County, New York. In that role, she oversees a portfolio of programs addressing teaching tough topics, Mexican Initiative for Deferred Action, Immigrants Vote Campaign, among others. She's the founder of Dreamers with No Borders, a group of young adults whose mission is to educate and empower the Latino, undocumented and migrant community in the Hudson Valley through the attainment of higher education and civic engagement. Laura also coordinates Mujeres Latinas of the Hudson Valley, a group of undocumented migrant women from the Middletown and Newark area that meet twice a month. Understanding firsthand the need for women to feel safe prompted Laura to find an alternative way to help women in the community. Laura understands the difficulties of being an immigrant in this country. She arrived to the United States when she was only 8 years old and saw the struggles that her mother faced with language and information assistance. By encouraging women to run their meetings, by leading a discussion or a workshop, she has prompted them to take a stronger leadership role in a world that views immigrant women as second-class citizens. Laura has served on the board of directors for the Rural and Migrant Ministry for the past 15 years. Laura took a lead part in a recent hunger strike to support the New York Dream ad. She was recently highlighted in a short video done by Women of the World from New York Times, was a special guest on Univision Al Despertar, one of the largest Spanish networks in the country, and was the keynote speaker to Catholic Charity's statewide event. So, Laura, why do you think Latinos don't participate?
I'm going to answer a question with asking another question. How many people know what this is? Can you raise your hand? How many people know what this is? How many people know where you can get this? Wow. Okay. And I'm assuming most of the people here speak English because that's the language that we're doing this. This is a voter registration. This is what it looks like, right? And you get this from your local board of elections. In Newburgh, where I'm from, the Orange County Board of Elections is 30 minutes away from the city where I live. The city of Newburgh has a large population of poverty, and most of the way that diversity is broken down is you have a 50% of Latino population living in the city of Newburgh, a 30% of black, and the rest white and other. So as you can tell, you know, this is one of the reasons why sometimes people don't go out and vote. They don't have access to obtaining this. Yes, you can probably print one out online, and you can get as far as filling it out online, but then you have to print it out, put it in an envelope, buy a stamp, go to your post office, and mail it off. So there's steps that sometimes don't allow certain individuals to have access to certain things, right? So there's this whole system of not even understanding what voting is that does not allow a lot of Latinos to go out and, one, register to vote or go out and vote. Recently, the YWCA has been working really hard to try to register as many people in our community, in a community that mostly is Latino and mostly black, and we find that access is one of the things that they lack. Not only that, you have a group of individuals who don't even understand the system. They don't know that they're voting for state senators or assemblymen or that they can vote for the school budget. So they lack basic information. So with the Immigrants Vote campaign that we're currently working on, we hope to educate the community. So we have a couple of workshops planned after October 14th, since that's the last date that you can fill one of these up and have it postmarked, so then you'll be eligible to vote on this year's elections. So when we talk about why Latinos don't vote, it's, you know, it goes more than just because they don't want to, they don't care, they don't know. It's that they're lacking a lot of the basic things that individuals that speak the language don't even know. And so I think that another thing that we lack is understanding that Latinos are interested in the same type of topics that any other American white citizen is. So there's a couple of polls that are out there that I was looking at today that talk about what's important for Latinos. And when they go down the line, they talk about economics, safety, you know, the same simple things that any American, white American citizen is interested in. And I think that sometimes people think that the first thing that Latinos want to think about or talk about is immigration. And sometimes that's not true. Just to take this a step further back, you have a lot of individuals who do have legal status, who have a green card, but don't have citizenship yet because they can't afford it. It's $680 just for the application, and then you have to get a lawyer to do that process. So, you know, you have a group of individuals. I have an article here from the Pew Research Center that says that about 5.4 million legal immigrants from Mexico who are eligible to become citizens of the United States have not yet taken that step. And a lot of the reasons is because it's expensive, they lack the information, and don't know the language, unfortunately, and can't take that citizenship test. So, I mean, there's a lot of more reasons why Latinos don't vote, but I just wanted to point out two of the most important reasons to why it's so difficult for some of the people that I know that haven't been able to register to vote or haven't become citizens to vote.
Thank you so much, Laura. And I also want to announce that we do have voter registration forms in that red table in the back, thanks to the Center for Civic Engagement. If anyone is not yet registered, please take one of those in the back. So the same question to Sandra Oxford. Sandra Cuellar Oxford proudly serves on the New York State Working Families Party Committee and is a delegate to the Judicial Convention. Recently, she was voted in as a delegate by an 11-county committee in the 19th Congressional District to represent our region. She co-chairs the Sullivan County Working Families Party and is currently the president of the Sullivan County branch of the NAACP, instated in January 2015. Born in Manhattan and raised in Queens, Sandra intentionally raised her two sons, Zachary and Desmond, in the rural communities of Ulster and Sullivan counties, where she has lived for the past 28 years. Sandra currently resides in hamlet of Harleyville in Sullivan County, New York. Relocating in 1988 to a farm in Modena, New York, her world collided with the harsh, brutal, and unfair conditions New York State farm workers faced. Appalled by the economic inequity, systemic racism, legislatively held over from the Jim Crow era, Sandra developed her determination to become a strong ally to farm workers and the New York State Farm Workers Justice Campaign. A move to Sullivan County expanded Sandra's advocacy for workers' rights. In the heart of the county's food processing corridor, she witnessed her neighbors being used as a disposable workforce in the food production industry. She's the vice president and political and community liaison of UFCW Local 888. In 2007, she joined Region 1 staff of the United Food and Commercial Workers International Union. This introduction into the labor movement galvanized her commitment to empowering workers to make a difference in their lives, their workplace, through organizing for lasting power. Sandra's appointment to various governmental boards and her volunteer service on numerous nonprofit boards spans two decades. She currently serves as a board member of the Hudson River Healthcare Health Centers, Workers Justice Center of New York, and is a member of WJFF Radio Community Advisory Board.
Thank you very much. Thank you to everyone for coming out this evening, and also to the co-hosts, co-sponsors here at BARD. To dovetail on some of what has already been spoken about, I think the commentary about when it becomes personal is real for everyone. Lightning strikes fast. I know for myself, it was back in 1989 when something happened within my family, and that was a bit of an awakening for me. And I don't think that once you are transformed in that way to be politically engaged, you can kind of go back to ignoring things. Where I live in a rural community in Sullivan County, we have to be creative in how we engage Latinos and how we engage different communities, because it feels, it takes a little bit more time to feel welcomed. And I often joke that I could write the Urban Person's Survival Guide to Living in a Rural Community, because I've made just about every mistake there with my neighbors. And it was alarming at times. However, I've been there for almost 30 years now, so I've been able to mend fences where I may have offended or ruffled some feathers. And the emerging community that I see in the Hudson Valley area is a real diverse community where we have folks who are really educated, and we have some folks whose education has been interrupted. So when we talk about Latinos, we have to really look at a spectrum of how we are going to engage people and how we're going to make people feel welcomed and how we are going to break down things like the voter registration. In Sullivan County, we had to go a little bit further about 4 years ago and threaten the county to have bilingual ballots available. And it was through the help of Eric Schneiderman and the Attorney General's office that we were successful without a lawsuit. And it was Sonia Ayala from the Orange County Democrats who were kind of our just letting us know what we had to do to ensure that the bilingual ballots would be there on Election Day. But that's just one part of it, right? Because how we talk to people about what's important to them and bring them in, I think, is how we can keep Latino people engaged and Latino people involved. I know for the activists that I've worked on in many human rights campaigns and many workers' rights campaigns, once you go through those experiences, you're transformed forever. You cannot go back. And hopefully, when we continue to keep those people together, I guess I wear three different hats politically. One is with a third party in New York State, and what we tell most political people who are looking for the endorsement of the Working Family Party is that we have no permanent friends and we have no permanent enemies. We just have permanent interests. And the interests often are about civil rights, are about access, are about some of these very important campaigns, whether we're looking at a state-level campaign. Right now, we're seeing, again, the licensing campaign for immigrants who may not have a Social Security number to be able to acquire a license, or at a higher level, at a national level, when we're talking about comprehensive immigration reform. So those are the issues that the Working Family Party looks at and wants to be sure that we are going to support political people in that realm. Also, as a president of one of two Latinas in New York State that's a president within the NAACP, I feel my role is to kind of bring some of those issues forward within that civil rights organization so Latino people understand that we too have our place at the table, and they've been very gracious on many occasions to be sure that our issues are heard. And lastly, I'm just going to briefly mention that the work within the labor movement, because the labor movement is another vehicle for politics, and it is a vehicle where many Latino people have put their heart and their soul and their sweat on the line. So we need the labor movement to also back us up.
Porque me duele si me quedo, pero me muero si me voy. Por todo y a pesar de todo, mi amor, yo quiero vivir en vos. Por tu decencia de vidala y por tu escándalo de sol.
Thank you, Sandra. I'm going to ask you about that in the next question, what you are doing. I would like to go with Professor Jonathan Becker. He's the Vice President for Academic Affairs, and he's the Director for Center for Civic Engagement, and he's an Associate Professor of Political Studies. And I guess that after you hear all of this, I would like you to fill in whatever gaps we miss, why Latinos don't vote, and sure. Maybe talking about the Voting Rights Act.
Well, thank you. First of all, I want to thank Marie-Ellen Lavoz for sponsoring this talk this evening. And I want to say it's a pleasure to Ed Barr be both a gender and ethnic minority on a panel. So I'll try to fill in some political science type things here. And I really thank our guests for coming today. It's fantastic. So just the fact is that Latinos in presidential elections as well as non-presidential years tend to vote less than other categories of voters. In the most recent presidential race, which is the supposition of this, but just to highlight that, in the 2012 elections, 66% of African Americans voted, 64% of non-Hispanic whites voted, 48% Hispanics voted, and 47% Asian Americans voted. Some people might say, oh, that's, you know, Barack Obama was running, it transformed things, but if you go back many years, you see Hispanics underperforming vis-a-vis other groups, very similar in numbers to Asian Americans, below white non-Hispanics, and often below African Americans. African Americans numbers did spike in 08 and 12 because of Obama, but even if you look at 2004, you had 60% African American participation and 47% Hispanic participation in elections. So that's the underlying thesis of this, and the question is why. I want to say a couple of things. One of them is, unfortunately, it has been the case that there's been a talk about a Hispanic surge in voting since 2000, and that hasn't happened. So I want to say, while it is true that the Trump factor seems to be inspiring many people to vote, and there is some indication of that, like Google searches went through the roof. I don't speak Spanish, but how you vote or how to register to vote in Spanish, you know, increased 2,200% after the first debate, right? In terms of Google searches versus like 300% for I want to vote in English. So there seems to be some indication there might be, but I would caution that until we know what the results are, there has been enthusiasm before for the coming surge of Hispanic voting, we'll see. So then the question is why? We've had some very good answers, so let me add a few more. There's nothing I particularly disagree with. I would say that one thing is that the Hispanic population, its content reflects, which is diverse, but at the end of the day often reflects those who don't vote regardless of what they are, right, or who they are. So, for example, Hispanic population has a disproportionate number of young people, right? 26% of the Hispanic population is between 18 and 33, and young people tend not to vote, no matter who they are. The Hispanic population who doesn't vote, which doesn't vote, tends to have lower income, and the Hispanic population which doesn't vote tends to have less education, hasn't completed high school education. They often tend to be single. The thing that makes Hispanics and Asian population, Asian American population, the most similar is linguistics, which is you have, you know, again, I'm not an expert at this, but as I read, roughly a third of the people who don't speak English as well, right? And that is the thing which matches up with Hispanics and Asian Americans, and you have very, as I said, very similar voting turnouts for them. The ones who do vote, by the way, are people who are over 40, people who have lived in the United States at least 20 years, people who have a college education. This is Hispanics, so the Hispanics who are voting. So, you know, of the 48% who are turning out, these are some of the characteristics which do them. They tend to be Puerto Rican and Cuban. People of Mexican heritage tend to vote less. And I think it's speaking to that, you know, some of the things like, did parents vote? That's an indicator of whether other people vote. And I think in a lot of cases we've heard before, there are not as long histories of parents engaging. The other thing I wanted to point out, and just to echo it, and I won't go too much over time, is just voter suppression impacts minorities in the United States, and Hispanics, like African Americans, often have that. There have been a big push in several states for proof of citizenship legislation, and while for voting to be able to register to vote. The real problem is actually not Hispanics voting, it's Hispanics registering to vote. Hispanics who are registered to vote tend to vote at 80 to 90%. Right, maybe a little bit less than others, but they tend to vote. But it's as the voting card is absolutely right. It's because Hispanics are not registering. And you see, what do you have? You have citizenship, which are requiring proof of citizenship. You have ID requirements being implemented, which disproportionately impact upon Hispanics as well as African Americans. And then you have voter purging system. There's this cross-check system, which Chris Kobach, who's the attorney general in Kansas, is a leader of, which sifts through voting rolls, those who have actually succeeded in registering, and kicks off those who it deems to be double registered. And that system, although it's supposed to be set up in such a way that it is discerning, that it uses first, middle, and last names and matches up last four letters of Social Security numbers, the way it has been implemented in a number of states, it does not look at Social Security numbers or middle names. So if you have a very common name, Juan Gonzalez, right? The chances of being purged, being identified as being registered in two places, and then removed from the ballot is significant. So I'm out of time. I think there are some. I don't want to be like the downer of the panel. I just want to say that, you know, don't count your chickens before they're hatched. And if young people voted the same number as percentages as old people, there would be a huge Hispanic surge. So let's see if that actually come. If the Trump factor and other factors and the good work that many organizations or grassroots organizations are doing has an impact on that. Actually, just one very final thing, which is. Just from a politics perspective, that Hispanics tend to be in states which are not competitive. Mm-hmm. Texas, California, right. The bigger ones. So people's choices to register, the belief of the impact on any given race is less. Like the power of an individual Hispanic voter because of the way they congregated in the U.S. tends to be less than other groups. And that's one more, you know, factor of many which might impact this. Thank you.
Thank you. I read an article in the New York Times magazine about this, and one of the reasons, apart from all of this, was that there are not so many civic classes at schools, and so that's where people get the information, and if the parents don't know anything, how can, you know, it's more difficult. So that was another reason. So the second question, do the traditional methods of engaging participation, such as forums, mailings, voter registration, and phone banking drives, work with Latino voters? Which works better, and what are you doing to engage Latinos to vote? And I would like to start with Milagros otra vez.
Well, I will say that any methods, the more methods, the better. Whatever works, keep trying. One of the things that I also wanted to mention that maybe was missing before is why we're still voting on a Tuesday. So people has to miss one day work in order to do that, or half a day work, and still it's a waste of time if you really need that salary. So one of the things that we need to do also is change this voting on Tuesdays. And also the location of the voting places are very confusing also. A lot of people in Pennsylvania were asking us where did they have to vote. So the reason why I'm still bringing all this in is because it's very clear that people need more information at all levels. So one of the things that we still need to be encouraging is that this communication, this education in the entire process needs to be done, and not at the last minute. It needs to be constant. It needs to be something being done in schools until it becomes second nature, that maybe the parents don't remember that an election is coming, but then the kids can go home and say, we talk in school about this and tell the parents about it. We have been talking about national elections. But if you, in White Plains, we have a school system that is separate from the city. And it's the amount of people that goes to vote for the school budget, the school board of education election of officers, it's pathetic. It's even much, much less than the people that goes out to vote on local elections. Although the budget for the school system, it's higher than the budget for the city. So I think it's all about educating people, keeping them in the loop, explaining that it's something very simple, bringing the same type of machine so that when they go there, it's something that they are not going to deal with the unknown. We in White Plains have a center, Centro Hispano is quite active, and they realize how important it is, the whole political system. And they are non-partisan, but they educate people on that, and they have been doing a wonderful job. The League of Women Voters is also very, very active in White Plains, and there are many other organizations that are pushing for not just the Hispanic community, but everybody to engage, because we will be surprised to see also how many people, non-Hispanics, don't vote also for a very unknown reason. I am a district leader. I go around looking for signatures in signature petition time. And it's surprising to me that I have always to be explaining the system when it hasn't changed. The system has always been the same one. You pick up signatures so that the person can go on the ballot. You are not really telling the person you're voting for this person. And this is people that has been, as I said, in this voting for years. So if you come from another country as an immigrant and you are not familiarized with the system, this can be an unfriendly type of situation. So the more we can educate and tell them that this is something very simple to do, although not as simple as we would like to. In Pennsylvania, we had also registrations that were translated. And in White Plains, we try to do as much as possible things that are also translated in Spanish. But there's still this push, it's holding hands, and for the first push, the first step, I'll go with you, go with some friends to the booth, take your children to the booth. I mean, anything that can be done to break the ice, I will recommend that to do.
Thank you, Milagros. Laura Garcia, can you talk a little bit more about the campaign, Immigrants Vote? What are you doing to engage Latinos to vote?
Yes. The Immigrants Vote campaign doesn't just target new immigrants, new citizens. We're targeting individuals in our community who normally don't tend to have a voice. One of the things that I have done, which is very simple, at the YWCA, we're right in the city of Newburgh, a couple of blocks from the high school and a couple of other locations where people do walk by, and I did I made two signs, two big signs, one really bright orange that simply says, register to vote here from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., and then sometimes we're open until 8 p.m., and it's so interesting that these past couple of weeks since we started doing this Immigrants Vote campaign, we find people walking up to our door, knocking, and registering to vote. And it's not just one person coming in. There's like two or three of them at a time, or people are pulling over and picking up voter registrations and are delivering them back to the office. And I have just been amazed because I never really realized that people are looking at things like that. Or I you know, when I sit with them and I talk to them and I conversate, it's like, I saw your sign, and that just reminded me I had to do it. And I think that it helps people who do want to do it, who do want to register, but don't find the time during the day to do so. So it was as simple as putting up two signs that really motivated a lot of people to come and register to vote. Another thing that we've been doing is that because we are in the city of Newburgh, right, we're one out of five other agencies that got a small grant from New York Immigration Coalition to do this Immigrants Vote campaign. The rest are in New York City. So, you know, when we went to trainings, they said, oh, yeah, we go to, you know, where the projects are, and we register 300 people in 2 days. And I'm like, well, 300, that's a lot of people. Why would never get that in the little city of Newburgh where, you know, we don't have that many people, we don't have that kind of traffic, the traffic foot where we are. So it's been a little challenging, but working with other organization partner agencies that work with the YWCA, such as Pat Stone, that works with farm workers and have programs that have direct contact with citizens and helping people register, become citizens, we've been able to have that reach of getting other people that really need to be registered, that are being registered. I read an article recently where they talk about non-for-profits, who are really making a difference in these communities where African Americans and Latinos live, because they're the ones that are servicing these communities. So we've been doing a lot of that. And one of the other things that I've been doing and using is my personal story. I'm an undocumented immigrant. I do have DACA, which is Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. I am not a citizen, so I cannot vote or register to vote. And a lot of people find that really interesting. Because what is the person who cannot vote or can't register to vote doing registering people to vote? And why does it matter, right? So a lot of the things I tell people is, you know, my personal story. The reason why it matters to me, the reason why I want to make sure that everyone has an opportunity to vote for what they believe in, because I do work for the YWCA. We have to be nonpartisan, so we can't really get into politics. But people know and understand what's going on in our world. They know that there are things that need to change and don't like the way that Latinos are being, represented by other people who don't understand our community. And so I've been able to really help people understand my personal story and why we need to get out and vote and why it's important. When I was younger, one of the things that I started doing as a social justice side was helping farm workers have a voice in Albany. And that really motivated me to push for a more just system for our community. And a lot of people really, feel the need to have to do something and act when they hear people's personal stories. And I've seen that in a couple of different Get Out the Vote campaigns where people are using personal stories to motivate others.
Thank you so much, Laura. I love your story. Sandra, so the question is the same. What are you doing to engage Latinos to vote? Maybe you can give us some tips.
Sure. Well, a variety of things. And I think I just want to focus a little bit on Laura's work because that work is very, very important. Often when we are trying to get out the vote, just before the vote, for folks here in the room who frequently vote and you go often to vote, you're considered preferred voters. So there's a very special list that we have of all of you guys, and it's easy for us to call you up and just remind you, election day, you know your polling place, and that's low-hanging fruit as far as getting that vote out. But the work that Laura's doing is the heavy lift, and that is where a lot of Latinos find themselves, and why the work you're doing is so wonderful and very important. And as we heard with the statistics, we really need to make better inroads in that area. I want to back up one second. I have a friend by the name of Bertha Lewis who started a polling and research institute in New York City. It's called the Black Institute. And the Black Institute was founded on the basis to do a few things. It was to do some of the research work of what was important within the Black community in New York, but also to dovetail that with the polling work. And I'm hoping that with all of what's going on right now, that we're going to see the emergence of some of that within, the Pew, they do their research, but they are, we need something a little bit more indigenous to us. So in saying that, The labor movement, I believe, is really pushing out there. When labor gets out, we usually do labor to labor. So when it's labor to labor, we already have a common interest because we are all part of the union. That's not to say that we have some folks that are going to vote their own way, I'm sure, on November 8th within the labor movement. However, for the most part, we have our candidates that we are focused on that are pro-labor and that are about trying to be sure that bread and butter issues and that the working class is front and center. So that is a real gathering place for Latino people. Latino people that the message, someone had mentioned, well, it's not always immigration that's the first issue. And for many of the Latino, these bread and butter issues are very, very important. Education and just sustaining and not slipping for the middle class or becoming part of the middle class. Those are the issues that are crucial. Lastly, the boots on the ground. The boots on the ground is the most important part, I think, because that is where we get out there just before the vote. We knock on doors, and we got to be sure that we get people out to the polls. I know one election year I worked in Detroit, and my only job on election day was just putting folding seats out for senior citizens that had to wait in lines that were like 3 and 4 hours to go vote. Luckily, we don't see that here in New York, but in other parts of the country, that's a reality for people. So we have to be sure that when we are looking at some of these polling places and some of the districts that folks are polling in, that we're able to shore up and cover the bases so that everybody who comes out to vote can vote.
Porque el idioma de infancia es un secreto entre los dos. Porque le diste
Florida. Professor Becker?
So I'd say a few things. One of them is what drives people. In this election, it's been stated at the start, there's a big driver, which is Donald Trump. Right? The things he has said about Hispanics and his policies on immigration are extreme. Mike Pence echoed that again last night during the debate. And that's showing up in the polls. You know, the polls are showing that something like 65% of Hispanics are intend to vote for Hillary Clinton, and only 17% intend to vote for Donald Trump. As I said before, registration is the most important thing, and there's much greater interest in registration now than there was. There was a spike after that, and there are reports, at least reports, of greater Hispanic registration. So there's a high motivation in this election. Not that in any other elections, but I think that that Trump has proven to be a polarizing figure, especially on these issues. And it's not necessarily that way. You know, Ronald Reagan won 50% of the vote in California when he ran for election. George W. Bush got 40% of the Hispanic vote. It's not only strictly party lines, but this election, the extreme statements that Trump is making, and it's reflective of, I mean, I can't blame someone from not wanting to come on this panel. Just, I mean, I didn't think, you know, because it would be tough in this circumstance. But what else matters? I think, you know, all of the get out the vote registration and how commendable it is for young people to be involved, registering others to vote and so forth is important. You know, one of the most important things is time, right? Time meaning that when younger people get older, they'll register to vote. Time matters in that you are having, I think, the percentage of eligible Hispanic population that increased from last election from 12 to 16 is something like 17% versus 2% for non-Hispanic whites. You had something like 1.2 million people, although it's true that naturalization can be very difficult, you had something like 1.2 million Hispanics become naturalized since 2012. Marielle just did the other day. So she will, in fact, vote. Good for her. Kingston. There's also more Puerto Ricans have moved to the mainland this time and will be eligible to vote. I think the other thing I want to say is impact matters, right? So Hispanics, you know, in spite of the relatively low turnout, are having an impact in key states. Nevada and New Mexico have tilted Democratic now, and there's a significant Hispanic populations there. They play an important role in Virginia, Colorado, and Florida as well. And in these states, you know, when your vote matters, the tendency to vote, you know, or the inspiration to vote can go up significantly. So I would say it does matter in some places and in some key states, and it might continue to grow. I think there is, you know, it's absolutely the case that there's a fallacy that one should only focus on presidential elections. We know that turnouts in midterm elections are incredibly low. Turnout in local elections are incredibly low. So the work in getting people to understand school boards matter, right? Town, you know, officials matter. Judges matter, right? State officials matter. That's important. That's another step along the way. But I would be cautiously optimistic about those. And I think at some point there will be a turning point, a tipping point, excuse me. Things don't just work on perfect arcs. But at some point, you know, we had two Hispanic politicians, they were Cuban Americans, competing, who probably came maybe in second and third in the Republican race, maybe second and fourth. I can't quite remember how it all panned out. There will be moments when there will be a galvanizing figure within the Hispanic American population, and the Hispanic American population is growing, where a new normal will set in. And I think you'll see a significant jump at that time. When it will happen, again, as I said, people have been predicting it for some time. So when it happens is a little unclear. I wouldn't want to count my chickens before they're hatched. But there will be a tipping point when enough young people have been exposed to the work of the people on this panel, of the like of that, and when the impact is seen, that at that point the Hispanic vote will, I think, go up, you know, to be more comparable to the non-Hispanic white and the African-American vote in the country.
Thank you so much. I have now more personal questions for Laura and Sandy.
Laura, can I say one more thing, Mario? Well, yes. I remember, because I'll forget. Tomorrow, if anyone's interested, at 1:30 in Preston Theater, Zephyr Teach Out, we'll be speaking to Professor Galui and my class. So if you want to see Zephyr Teach Out, tomorrow, 1:30, Preston Theater. And we did, Jan Faso, to his credit, let me say, did come and speak to the same class last week.
And I asked
so we
him
have
the
had Republicans on campus.
And I asked him the immigration question, by the way. If anyone is interested, then you can ask me.
And he sort of answered.
He answered something different from what you would expect. Okay. So let's start with Laura Garcia. As a Latina involved in politics, how do you see the campaign at the local level? What have you seen?
So in the city of Newburgh, there's a group that I helped put together called Dreamers with No Borders. One of the first things that we were really interested to do was to get more involved in our local politics, because even though most of us in the group can't vote, we realized that we didn't know what was happening in our own city. And one of the things that we did was attend the city council meetings. After a couple of times attending, people started noticing us. They're like, who are you guys? What are you guys doing here? And we became friends with one of the first Latina city councils in the city of Newburgh called Karen Mejia. And she really educated us and helped us understand that whole system. We were able to ask city council to have their agenda translated into Spanish. And it wasn't easy. Karen Mejia pushed for it, and she got a lot of nasty emails from people saying, this is America. We speak English. And it was a challenge. But from there on, we understood. And then, obviously, we were able, we were victorious. We got the agenda translated. And since then on, we decided that we wanted to be more involved and keep asking and pushing for things that were necessary in a city where you have a 50% of a Latino population. You know, it just doesn't make sense that they're not included in those decisions or that information. So then we, till now, are fighting the Board of Ed to have more of a diverse members in the Board of Education. They don't have a Latino representation, and I've had a lot of nasty comments from a lot of them. Whenever I go up and speak, I try to make it a point that I do speak two languages, and my first language is Spanish. So when I get up to the mic, I do speak to them in Spanish, and some of them roll their eyes or tell me, just because I'm Italian descent doesn't mean that I'm going to sit here and speak to you in Italian, but I'm trying to prove a point. So there's always a back and forth with the Board of Ed. But it's really important for us to be able to stand up and speak up for our community. And it's been a challenge, especially one, because we look young, right? And so people sometimes don't really want us around, too. We're Latinos, so they see trouble when they see us coming. And it's really motivated us to not only persuade our local politics, which we've seen the changes that can happen if you just push and ask for things, but we've been able to definitely make significant changes that now we can say we did that. So
I remember you mentioned something, someone approached to you, why don't you vote for this guy?
So with this whole voter registration thing I've been doing, which has become part of my life these past couple of weeks, and I'm really enjoying it, I've also been a target of a bit of racism. There was a gentleman who volunteers for a campaign, and he came to me and said, it's great that you're registering people to vote. That's wonderful. What religion are you? And I said, well, I'm Catholic. And he said, okay, that's great, because the person that I want to talk to you about, it's very religious, and he doesn't believe in abortions. And, so I stopped the gentleman and I said, just so you know, I work for a feminist organization. Just so you know. So, even though my religion is important to me, I also have other beliefs. And then he went on to saying, well, let me ask you another thing. What do you think about illegals? And I said to him, sir, that's not the proper word to use when I'm talking about undocumented. And then he went on and on and on about how I felt that illegals were going to school for free, that we American citizens were paying taxes and these people were having free education. So I let him speak for a little bit, and then I said to him, sir, I'm an undocumented person. I came here when I was 8. I told him my story. I told him that my father was deported 8 years ago, and he didn't flinch. He didn't look sad. He didn't look happy. He was just standing there looking at me straight in my eyes and talking. And you know, obviously before that conversation, he was talking to me about God. And I said to him, if you're a man of God, sir, you would not call an individual an illegal. And the conversation after that, you know, we kept going. I just couldn't back down. I couldn't believe that somebody would disrespect my community and disrespect me in my face. I mean, I've heard it from other people on TV, but never heard it personally being told to me. And I think that that even motivated me more to make sure that my community knows that there's a lot that we're fighting for, and we're going to lose this election year if we don't get out there and vote.
Thank you so much, Laura Garcia. Sandra Cuellar, Oxford. As a person involved in politics, can you talk a little bit what things you have been doing with campaigns?
Well, at the risk of turning some folks off in the room, I will say I love roller derby. I play full contact on skates for two different teams, and I believe that roller derby is far more diplomatic than politics. You know, I have been an activist, as I said, since 1989, and that was my baptism, I guess, into politics, but formal electoral politics was 2004. And I think since 2004, what I've discovered is if you're going to be involved in local politics, it's good to have rhinoceros skin, which is about 9 inches thick, because you're going to need it. You're going to need it locally. If you live in a small community, these are folks that are your neighbors. They may have coached your kid on the Pee Wee soccer team. There's a variety of connections that you may have to folks who are just really ideologically working in a whole different direction than you are. So for me, it's been a very delicate art of navigating that within a small rural community that I live in. I will say that the folks on the other side, and I don't want to label Republicans because I have worked with some really good Republicans. I will say that, and I'll use the example, because in every county in the state, your sheriffs are elected. The sheriff is an elected official. In Sullivan County, oddly enough, we have a sheriff who considers himself, he's a Republican conservative, but he considers himself a human rights activist, and he has shaken the hands of just about every undocumented driver in the county, and we've made a deal that if you're caught driving without your documentation, you must show up to court and respond to the ticket, and you will not be arrested, and you will not be detained, and there will not be the fear of deportation put on you. Now, that didn't happen really because he was a human rights activist. That happened because of politics. That happened because a bunch of overzealous Latinos who want a taco truck on every corner put him in a corner and said, look, this is what we need. These folks are working. They are the backbone of the economic development that you folks introduced into this community. So politics has really offered many of us who are a little bit outspoken to shepherd some others that have a personal interest in this struggle. And I think that it is the responsibility of everybody in the community to participate at some level. Whether you participate petitioning on your Democratic committee, your Republican committee, like myself, I do the Working Family Party Committee, to be sure that our candidates are on the ballot. Whether you run at a local level, on a school board, on a town council, a Senate seat, it's all part of that circle. There's 360 degrees to the circle in the community when it comes to politics. There's at least 360 ways to participate. My first question to most campaigns is, where the heck is your Spanish literature? That's every, I don't think I have yet to work on a campaign in 2004 where the candidate came to me with the Spanish literature. And you have to help people, right? We even have to help the candidates. We have to help these campaigns to understand that, yeah, they may speak really good English in that interpersonal 3 minutes that you're having with them, but if you want your voter to understand the issue, often it's better in their native language that they can read it and they can understand it and they could really get behind you and support you. So I don't know. Did I go over with my time? Am I okay? I'm sorry. All right. But anyway, that was, yeah. Everybody, we all need to be involved at some way, shape, or form.
Jonathan?
Yeah, I just wanted to say it was interesting. Before I came here today, I went to the websites of Sue Serino and Terry Gibson, who are running for State Assembly, or State Senate, excuse me, and Zephyr Teachout and John Faso, who are running for Congress. And none of the websites, maybe I missed it, but none of the websites had anything in Spanish, which I found fascinating. And in looking at the issues that they highlighted, and again, I think it was said very early that there Hispanics in America are a diverse community, and issues that interest Hispanics are diverse. It is not only about immigration that usually comes in third or fourth in terms of the numbers. That having been said, and all of the major categories of issues that all of them dealt with, immigration never came up in any of the four websites. So it's interesting.
Thank you for the update. Milagros, the city of White Plains is 30% Latino according to the census. How does this change the campaign messages in your area?
It's actually a very important question, and that's why you're asking it. I have been in the city council now. This is my ninth year. The times are for 4 years, and I ran for my third re-election last year, and I won another 4 years. And we are council people citywide. And so we have to make sure that we are representing everybody and the entire city. So when you are a Latino, when you are a Hispanic, and you are supposed to be representing everybody, but you still have to show that there is a community there that is very close to your heart, because it's your community, the one that really you understand 100%, you have to make sure and be very careful that that's not translated as you're going to be biased. So it's a very thin line there. And fortunately, I have never been in a situation where I have been blamed or pointed out as being biased. But I think that it helps when you are really involved with the community, that you are not playing political games, and you are very transparent and straightforward, and so you are trying to be fair in your decisions, the way you legislate. What is being said in this table, it's all truth. I mean, our community needs a lot of help with translations, with education in the processes, and so on. Laura was mentioning about her church interest, would I call it like that? And something that is, for example, very different in White Plains is that the African-American community, they get their political information from the churches. And we don't do that in the Catholic Church. In the Hispanic Church, politics and religion are not supposed to be together. And that's a dilemma that I know that many people in the Hispanic community, Latino community right now are debating about it. Because if we are not in the same field, our community is not getting really informed as other communities. So maybe there is something to be considered since the church is being now more open. But it's an interesting it's an interesting dilemma. I wanted also to bring my daughter's case. She was also on the front page of the papers. Her case to become a citizen. She became a citizen finally this year, which makes her very happy because she's going to be voting for Hillary, a woman. But she got her citizenship 11 years after me, and almost 29 years after coming to this country. And she was blamed, especially when I was running the first time my campaign, as that I have a daughter that was an illegal alien. And what happened is actually the Immigration Department did all the mistakes that they could do. It was all documented by the lawyers. They lost her fingerprint several times. She was aging out, and they missed her documentation. And still she was getting involved and still was volunteering and still was doing many things, although she didn't have her papers. So I really get, try not to get upset, but it really bothered me when I hear the term illegal aliens. There is no such a thing. We are all documented people in one way or another, and we are all citizens from this world. So I thought that I could make a difference by getting involved politically, and that's what I did. And I haven't made an official announcement in my city, but I am putting right now a team to an explanatory team, as they call it, to run for mayor. And I know that even if I don't win, I know I will win, because I will be tracing the path for other people behind me to know that if I could try, they could try too. And one thing that I always say is that having an accent is a beautiful thing, because that means that you speak at least two languages. Yeah.